D-Mace, Finnegan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. We are proudly presented by Bet365. Whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. Okay, so before the break, I introduced an acronym to all of you that you probably have never heard of because I had never heard of it before yesterday. QUIBR. And that stands for Quarterback Unique Instant Buyer's Remorse. At CBSSports.com, Chris Trapasso, who is one of CBS Sports' NFL draft analysts, wrote an interesting article with the headline, How Teams Struggle to Evaluate and Find Quarterback Prospects Who Become Stars Quickly, and Why It Happens So Often. So Trapasso looked at a couple of categories as to why NFL decision makers seem to have issues finding these quarterbacks that are worthy of being top picks in the NFL drafts. So let's start with the first section, which is titled Misinterpreting Production. Trapasso writes, quote, "We all understand how college football is ahead," in quotations, "of the NFL when it comes to schematic wrinkles. And at the collegiate level, 90% of the time, those new ideas are offensive-centric. Their typical aim is to maximize production in the face of lacking athleticism or pure talent. The read option, the spread formation, the air raid, the RPO, just to name a few. They were all born in college, all put new stressors on a defense, and all generated radical boosts in efficiency for the players within those schemes that pushed the limits on offense. But they rarely created high-caliber prospects out of thin air. There's a reason draft analysts stress traits almost ad nauseum, because in most instances, those quarterbacks can't take the advantages afforded to them in their collegiate offenses to the NFL. Trapasso notes college football legend Tim Tebow couldn't stick as a passer in the NFL. In fact, none of the top six in career passing yards in college football history have experienced clear success in the NFL. Of the top 10, Bo Nix is the only viable starter. Too often production at quarterback, even the advanced metrics, is misinterpreted for professional promise when said production in college is due to everything but the quarterback's individual ability."
Yeah, that's why you have guys, you know, whether it's Tim Tebow or Graham Harrell or, you know, name a few of the Alabama quarterbacks that have these gaudy numbers, and you look at the system that they're in, and it doesn't project to the NFL once they get there. That's why, that's what make Cam Ward so intriguing, because the stuff, yeah, the numbers are there, and no, he may not look like Joe Burrow or this guy, but he has those traits. He has some of those traits that we're looking for. Some quarterbacks don't have them. Some quarterbacks just can put up big numbers, and that doesn't mean you're a first-round pick.
By the way, the top 10 quarterbacks in passing yards in college history: Case Keenum, Dillon Gabriel, Timmy Chang, Landry Jones, Graham Harrell, Sam Hartman, Bo Nix, Ty Detmer, Will Rogers, and Kellen Moore.
Bo Nix was the only top 10 pick. Bo Nix was the only, I think.
Bo Nix was late first round, right?
No, Bo Nix was top 10 pick. Top 12 picked last year.
And Bo Nix also played a lot of games.
Yeah, played a lot of games.
So that has something to do with that. There is, after reading this article, a little bit of Captain Obvious in there.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Would we agree?
I mean, yeah, but this is where, you know, this is why when you can't just look at the numbers or the wins or losses, wins and losses, because, you know, you hear, well, he shouldn't be a top two pick. Look at his record. They bring that up about Shedeur Sanders. He didn't beat anybody. Look at his thing. He didn't. Every player doesn't have a resume like Tim Tebow. But look where Tim Tebow is. As far as, look at what his career was as far as football, you know. He didn't have much of a career in football. So the wins and losses, I'm not so much on that. Do you have the trait? And this is what keeps someone like Cam Ward in the discussion of being the number one overall pick. He has some of those traits that we talk about. They say it. They've said it. He has some of those traits. But, you know, does he have them all? Probably not. Is he a Joe Burrow type of quarterback? No, but he has some of the traits. So we're going to work based upon that, not look at solely the numbers.
One section of this, trait degradation. The third element, well, we've skipped the second. We'll go back to the second. The third element of QUIBR is what I'm labeling as trait degradation. And it's simple. College quarterbacks appear to have standout traits on the collegiate football field, yet when the talent level is raised exponentially in the NFL, those standout traits are not so standout anymore. The author uses Marcus Mariota as the example. And Willie, you do have some quibbles with his explanation.
To a degree,
let me read it first. Marcus Mariota is a fine example here. Sure, he tested like an elite-level athlete after a decorated Heisman-winning career at Oregon. So much of his game and with the Ducks and appeal as a prospect was predicated on keeping the ball on zone reads and outrunning everyone in the Pac-12. Even with 4.52 speed, that never felt that fast on film. Mariota wasn't more athletic than everyone else on the field anymore once he got to the NFL. Those 30 to 40 yard scampers essentially vanished. He had to rely on his arm much more, and his arm strength was average by NFL standards. And suddenly his offensive coordinator wasn't throwing something completely new at the opposition every week. Mariota's cautionary tale is twofold. He had incomplete experience at Oregon, which is the second one, incomplete experience at Oregon, and he flopped because of trait degradation in the NFL.
I mean, he played 41 games of college football. That's pretty good, I would say. As far as the running, I do think Marcus Mariota was a good athletic runner in the NFL. Mm-hmm. There were times where he was playing through a pulled hamstring or something. There were times where he played where he wasn't able to run. I can remember one specifically. But if you look at his rushing numbers, his rookie year, he had an 87-yard touchdown pass. That's pretty athletic. He had his
touchdown run.
Touchdown run, yeah. He had a 41-yard touchdown catch his rookie year. He had a high of 41 yards running his second year, 34, 27. He was a good runner. Mm-hmm. So I disagree with that. I thought he was very athletic. It was much more his limitations as a passer as to why he didn't make it.
And
so
by
the
way,
trait degradation, I'm not buying that particular one on Mariota.
But here's the thing with that. You only degraded the trait. The only reason you did that was because you didn't use it.
Right. The trait he averaged over five yards per carry.
Yeah, but what I'm saying
is that he just didn't run very often.
Exactly. Yeah. Is Oregon made sure they incorporated that into their scheme.
Yes.
So it was a trait.
He ran for over 700 yards all three of his years at Oregon.
Why do you think Lamar Jackson is the perfect example? The trait degradation didn't happen when he got into the NFL. Why? Because they continued to use it.
Yes.
They used it to their benefit. Exactly.
Yeah.
The Tennessee Titans chose not to use it
as
a weapon.
They were worried he's going to get hurt.
Exactly.
All of that stuff.
Baltimore didn't want him to get hurt, but they were like, listen, to help him develop as a quarterback, we got it. What did I say yesterday? Let's just continue to do some of the things that he's comfortable with. He's comfortable with that. And then as he started to grow, as he did, mm-hmm. what did we do? We started removing those. Well, we're not going to do that as much. We're going to change coordinators because now he's developed into a passer. So when you have guys like this, I go back to what I think it was Bill Parcells or either Bill Belichick that said, don't tell me what he can't do. Show me what he can do and let's do that. And let's do it really good and develop him. And in the process, let's develop him as a player.
All right, you tell me if this is trait
degradation.
Degradation. Yards per attempt for Mariota as a runner in the NFL, 7.4 yards per carry, 5.8 yards per carry. This is year by year, 5.2, 5.6, 5.4. Those are his 5 years as a Titan, as a starter. The issue wasn't that he couldn't run.
No, the issue was...
he could still run. It was number of times they chose to run him, staying healthy, and, as does point out, limitations of the pass.
His yards per rushing attempt in college, by the way, 7.1, 7.4, 5.7.
Right, but there is going to be a drop-off.
But those were designed. You're Lamar Jackson. He had a lot of designed runs. So,
and he was on a loaded team that was just full of athletes all over the field. They were a great team.
They might have been one of the fastest teams ever. But I look at it and say, well, listen, the one thing that you should have been paying attention to that should have gave you pause, and maybe it did, is that he couldn't throw outside the numbers. The minute that was one of the things that we brought up in the show back then, like, he has improved. Look at all his passes.
Yeah.
They're in between the numbers.
I think that was an issue.
Yeah.
And I think the other intangible was, I don't think he had the culture driving instinct that Mike Borgonzi seeks with a high first round pick either. Is that fair to say? I don't think he was a eye of the tiger.
Not
everybody
Borgonzi,
father follow me. Mariota, right?
Yeah, Mariota, yeah.
I mean, why he wasn't a great starter.
Exactly, yeah.
I think that was an issue, right?
Yeah, I think.
I mean, he's a great
the leadership.
Person. He was a hard worker, great person.
How he led.
But it wasn't a driving of the bus kind of leadership.
Yeah.
The other aspect of QUIBR. That's a mouthful. Is incomplete
quibber?
Experience. Yeah, quibber. I like that. Quibber. Is incomplete experience, and I don't think it means the number of actual games that they played at the college level. The author writes, quote, quarterback evaluations go wrong because of two cozy collegiate environments that don't provide real life, quote unquote, real life experiences for a passer and mask his weaknesses in the process. And the first quarterback mentioned is Mac Jones. Because Mac Jones had some gaudy numbers at Alabama, correct? The problem, Jones threw to four future first-round picks during his time as the Crimson Tide starter. Jerry Jeudy, Henry Ruggs, Jalen Waddle, and Devontae Smith. On every dropback, Jones had an unprecedented advantage in his receiving core no NFL team could ever replicate on Sundays.
Right. This, again, I don't think this breaks new ground. I think this is a little bit of Captain Obvious.
I know, but it's still interesting to
but
see
yeah.
it. It,
because
like
as we try to bring it back to Cam Ward or Sanders, whoever you want to say, I think some of these principles apply. I don't think NFL teams are ignoring this at all. One that jumped out to me, too, along those lines is the amount of time that you have to throw, the percentage of time that you're pressured tends to be low on loaded teams. I would imagine Mac Jones, while he's throwing to all these amazing wide receivers, also had pretty good amount of time to throw.
So the author uses Zach Wilson as an example coming out of BYU. He writes, for example, in 2024, half of the 42 qualifying quarterbacks were pressured on at least 35% of their dropbacks, which represents a drastic difference over the course of an entire season compared to Zach Wilson seeing pressure on fewer than 22% of his dropbacks with the Cougars in 2020.
Okay, that brings up this issue. Because when you're talking about Shedeur Sanders, he didn't have a loaded team. He had Hunter, yes. He didn't have a loaded team for the first round picks.
Not a good offensive line at all.
His offensive line was bad. They got better last year, but his offensive line, let's just frankly, they were bad. But yet and still, he went out there and he played well, exceptionally well. He wasn't the reason why they were losing games. He was in an environment that wasn't cozy. Yeah, his dad was on the sideline. That part is cozy. But when he crossed over that line and he stepped on that, his dad couldn't help him no more. We saw that firsthand. Why? Because the offensive line was bad. But yet and still, he goes out there and he completes damn near 70% of his passes. And he's making the he doesn't have the strongest arm, I know that. But he's making all the throws. So, yes, when you talk about a Mac Jones and those guys, and you look at it and you say, well, that's the reason, you know, an incomplete sort of evaluation.
Incomplete experience.
Yeah, an incomplete experience. I can say, Shedeur Sanders had the complete experience. But they use it. It's like they don't give that. They don't make that a plus for him.
What's interesting here is the author, Chris Trapasso, uses an example of one quarterback prospect who fell victim to all three of these. Mm-hmm. Incomplete experience, trait degradation, and misinterpreting production. And it was Sam Darnold coming out of USC. I'm trying to find. I had to scroll up, so now I'm scrolling back down. There are instances when all three of these components mix together to blind us completely. Sam Darnold exemplifies this. Throwing to Juju Smith-Schuster in 2016, while being pressured on just 24.9% of his dropbacks, many misinterpreted Darnold's production while he got incomplete experience, then clung to his status as an elite quarterback prospect throughout the following season at USC. In that season, Darnold led the NCAA in turnovers, showing clear signs of problems against pressure, but it was too late. The collective mind of the NFL draft world had made up its mind. That overconfidence suppressed clear indicators of massive issues against pressure from Darnold and his good but not great athleticism. Now, we've seen what Sam Darnold did last season. But that Sam Darnold coming out of USC was used as an example in this article of all of those factors combining to maybe misevaluate.
You know who else went through that, I think?
Who's that?
Matt Leiner. Same thing. He had mm-hmm. future first rounders. He had the Heisman Trophy winner on his team. One of the greatest players in college football history he had on his team. And he had hell of a wide receivers. And all of that, he still, he wasn't a first pick in the draft, but he still ended up as a top 10 pick.
He slipped a little bit, but yeah. He was still a pretty high first pick.
Yeah, why? Because of the year prior. But all of those indicators, because he turned out to be a horrible, and I mean a horrible.
Yeah. Darnold has done a lot better than him.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's an interesting argument because Darnold I don't know if Trapasso is a Jets fan.
Is he just talking about number one picks?
Because
here?
I think he's talking about top quarterbacks.
Yeah.
And he used Darnold as an example of all of the different things combining. Right.
But Darnold still kind of got there. Like he's
eventually
Matt
late
didn't
arrival.
Get there at all.
Yeah, Leinart never got there. Mm. I read the whole thing, and he makes some points that I think are valid points. I don't think it's any earth-shattering, groundbreaking thing. Is he suggesting that Cam Ward, I would love to have seen him bring it back to Ward and Sanders.
Well, why don't we do that quickly?
Yes.
So the misinterpreting production. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. None of Cam Ward's weapons at Miami are expected to be high draft picks, correct?
I think that's fair.
Yep.
So,
and he was at Washington State before, not a loaded roster
at
that point, and did well. Brought them, he rose them up, right?
So it would seem that Cam Ward would not fall victim to that, the misinterpreting production, because he wasn't playing, again, if I recall correctly, was not playing with anybody who was – he didn't have the receivers that Mac Jones had at Alabama. So you can't use – it doesn't seem that you could use that against Cam Ward. But what about the other two? What about the trait degradation? Or the – what was the other one? I've already forgotten
what
it was.
Trait was the Q, the U, the I.
Quiver.
I think the trait degradation.
Incomplete experience is the one I was just referencing.
He definitely has a lot of experience.
Yeah, he has a lot of experience. Now, in regards to the trait,
I guess you could probably throw that. You could probably throw the previous point into the misinterpreting production and the incomplete experience, right? Because Cam Ward still put up lofty numbers, although
no matter where he was, the numbers were really good.
Mm-hmm.
UIW 2 years, Washington State 2 years, and then Miami. His numbers have been always good.
One texter says, for me, you were all making a case for Will Levis to be the Titans quarterback at least one per year to see what he can do with a decent offensive line of receivers that will get open.
Oh, boy. But
that was not my intent.
One thing that did come up in my mind when we were discussing, when he was discussing the trait, an elite trait, like he used Johnny Manziel in there too, which was, he was such a unique college player. Johnny Manziel had a lot of issues about preparing and stuff like that that hurt too.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as this elite runners kind of thing, Cam Ward is really not a runner. That hasn't been discussed very much. But if you take a look at his rushing yards year by year, he is not a runner. Even though you see these great plays where he extends plays in the pocket, makes these great throws down the field, that is one tool that early on in your career, we saw it with Steve McNair here, definitely saw it with Lamar Jackson, as you pointed out. But as you continue to grow into the role as a quarterback, it does help you be effective early if you can run. And or, Cam Ward is not a runner.
Or do you have escapability?
And I think now that's different, right? I think he may have that in the pocket.
Extend the play. You don't necessarily have to run, but extending the play to a point where now you're finding open receivers. So do you have the trait of, you know, being able to extend the play, escape the pocket, and not necessarily run? I think I want to believe that. I mean, if given the opportunity to run, he will. In this league, like any other quarterback, you put them in that position to run, they're going to run. Now, how good of a runner are they? It just depends.
In college.
He wasn't a runner at all in college.
He had – now, remember, in college, the rushing stat is weird because the sacks
and all that other stuff.
So if you only look at yards from scrimmage, take away the sacks, 100 – he had – only 58 yards rushing, 144 in his 2 years at Washington State. 58 the first year, 144. And then last year, only 204 yards at Miami. Now, a lot of that, there's some quarterback sneaks. Mm-hmm. Like, he had some touchdowns in there. I'm sure there were short yards.
Yeah, eight touchdowns,
and then four.
Four touchdowns last year, yeah.
But by and large, those are not the numbers of a running quarterback. It's not even close to a Mariota or a Lamar Jackson or guys like that. Not that he has to be great, but we saw with Ryan Tannehill would be a great example of being able to get the timely run is a tool that should not be completely ignored. And Cam Ward really doesn't have that.
615-737-1025. Now, we all know what Quibr is, Quibr. 615-737-1025. Perhaps we can revisit this. We can dive deep into Cam Ward as the NFL draft approaches, which mercifully is less than 3 weeks from now. 615-737-1025. It is time to ask D-Mace. 615-737-1025. Call us, text us on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Derek is ready for your questions. Also, this week's Nashville's Best Deal comes from Bad Axe Throwing Nashville, downtown's largest axe throwing venue and your go-to spot for food, fun, and vibes. Enjoy panoramic views of the city, a killer soundtrack, craft cocktails from the full bar, and a Northwoods-inspired menu with a southern twist. This week, score half off a $50 gift card while supplies last. Head to thegamenashville.com/deals and grab yours now.
G-Mace. He played 15 years in the NFL.
Quick throw.
He had over 12,000 receiving yards.
Midfield, and there he goes! 80 yards for the touchdown!
And now you can ask him anything. Have a question about football or life? Now's your time to ask D-Mace.
We'll welcome you in.
Now.
D-Mace.
On 102.5 and 106.3, The Game and the Game Nashville app.
D-Mace, Finnegan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. It is indeed time to ask D-Mace, so call us, text us, 615-737-1025. Derek is ready, willing, and able to answer your questions. But before we get to them, we do have an update.
Mm-hmm.
So before, at the beginning of the program, we had a little side bet. And Willie, what was the bet that we made?
We bet... a small order, a medium order of fries.
I think you called it a side order.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which
so
can be medium.
The size depends on the restaurant, I suppose.
Significant, yeah.
Yes.
To the three of my colleagues here, that Jared will spend at least two segments on the attendance at the Colorado Pro Day.
So if you missed it.
Of the various Titans brass. Right?
If you missed it.
Because this is. That there was news, right, that you read
Albert
at the beginning of the
show. Albert Breer of Sports Illustrated, because Chad Brinker, the supreme ruler of football, was not expected to attend Colorado's Pro Day. Albert Breer tweeted 2 hours ago that Chad Brinker will indeed be in attendance at Colorado's Pro Day. At 11:52 a.m., at Jared Stillman, why did Chad Brinker change his mind when earlier this week he was not scheduled to attend? And the first response underneath is the Brian Windhorse meme where he's got his two fingers up in the air. Like, why is this happening?
So you have that, and that tweet doesn't even address the fact that Brian Callahan is not expected to be there. That is red meat for Jared. So I feel pretty good about how that's trending.
We will find out what happens. All right. The first Ask the Mace question from an unnamed texter.
Let's do this.
Derek, what's your favorite cocktail, and how many can you drink?
Oh, man. Goodness gracious. Now,
how many can you drink? That could be incriminating.
Honestly, I'm really like a two. My limit is two. Sometimes I even barely finish the one, but my max is two. And typically it's Grand Marnier, something nice. Smooth. You know, I don't need the mixers and all that other stuff. I don't need the fancy drinks. Not to say that I haven't gotten them before, but I don't need the fancy drink. If I just went out with the fellas, just give me a Grand Marnier, and I'm sipping on one for a good while.
Yeah.
And then if the conversation, I might get that second one, you know.
We used to talk about buzz maintenance.
Yes. You got to have that.
Moderation. But keep the buzz moving a little bit. Sip on it. Yeah,
just keeping it there, right there. Water. Drink a little bit more.
You're not going to ask me to pass the Cavassier?
Oh, no.
No. Okay.
You know the trendy thing when you go to a game now where you put the person on the Jumbotron with a beer?
They chug it.
And they chug the beer. Of course, Taylor Lewan has made this famous with, chugging it through the catfish or whatever, some of the things he does.
It's nasty.
But the other day, it was like a week ago, a former Predators captain, Kimmo Tiiminen, was in the house, and they showed him. He had a cocktail. He didn't have a beer. But he tried to, chug a pretty hard drink. You could tell. It was like, man, I can't do this.
I read that question at the break.
It's a dilemma.
And it brought me back to New Year's Eve 2014. I was still living in Washington at the time. The next day, I was scheduled to cover the Winter Classic, Capitals and Blackhawks. And I would have been 25 at the time. And I fancied myself a bourbon drinker because I thought it was fancy.
Okay.
I had way too many. Was drunk as a skunk. And at one point, two of my friends who lived in Northern Virginia, but a little bit of a ways away from Washington, they had rented a hotel room because they were going to the hockey game the next day. I ended up crashing unexpectedly in their hotel room.
/ passing out?
At one point, I was lucid enough, I guess you could say, to turn on the shower, lay face down on the bathroom floor. I had a bit of an icy hot situation because it was the cold floor and the hot water. And I passed out with the shower running. My friend woke up and eventually walked into the bathroom because she was like, why is the shower running? And noticed me face down. And fortunately, I had a towel on, so she didn't see anything. But
Oh my goodness.
But then I covered the game the next day, and then 2 months later I moved here, so it all turned out okay.
There you go. Perfect.
All right.
Perfect.
So you would be able to accurately answer, how many can you drink?
Not
because you
too
pushed,
many.
You pushed the envelope.
Yeah. It's two. I'm two, man. I can't go. I don't see how they do it nowadays.
Let's go to James on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. James, thank you for calling. Please go ahead.
Thank you, sir. Good morning, D-Mace.
Good morning,
sir.
Hey, I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Fine, thank you. I wanted to ask you, y'all were talking about Cam Ward's extending the play and elusibility earlier. What historical quarterback does he remind you the most about when it comes to that? Is it Danny Fouts or is it Peyton Manning or... Because he could still be a great quarterback without being able to run. He just has to have that, like you said, extending the play. And I'll shut up and listen, sir.
Thank you for the call, James.
Thank you for the call. Yeah, I would equate him to, again, it's just one of many things. To me, he reminds me of a C.J. Stroud or a Patrick Mahomes or a Joe Burrow from this sense. I think he has the ability to run if he needs to. I do believe that. But he's one of those guys that wants to, he has this innate ability to escape the pocket, but he's not looking to run. He's looking to extend the play so he can find somebody down the field. That's what he reminds me of. Not to say that C.J. Stroud can't get a first down or can't run if he needs to. Not to say that Patrick Mahomes, he's shown that he can run. We know Lamar Jackson can run. Josh Allen, he didn't run much his senior season. Now, the year before that, I think he had like 500 yards in college. But he didn't run much his senior season as far as yardage. I just want a quarterback to have the ability to get outside the pocket, to escape the pocket, buy a little time, and if he needs to run, then you run. Or if we choose to run an RPO, you have the ability to run an RPO. But I don't want to do that too many times in fear that because he's not used to running, that then you put him in a position where he's going to get hurt. Someone like Lamar Jackson or someone like Hurts or even Josh Allen, since he's gotten in the NFL, they design plays for you. So you know that's going to be a part of the package. So you know that, yeah, I may open myself, but we're going to design these plays where he knows that you get all you can, but get down after that. If you want to do that with Cam Ward, I think he's going to have the ability to do it. But I think he has that trait when you're comparing him as far as that area of his game. I think he's more so in the line of Mahomes, C.J. Stroud, guys like that that can run but are looking more so to extend the play rather than run.
615-737-1025. We see your calls and your texts. We will continue them on Ask D-Mace. Coming up next, 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025, 1063, The Game. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025, 1063, The Game. We were trading war stories about being drunk during the break, many of which cannot be repeated on air.
There were some good ones, though.
I had to PG up the story I told.
Yeah.
But I did lay on the floor, on the cold floor with the shower on. It does work. It does work. It's like icy hot. You got the cold floor. You got the hot shower. I recommend it.
I'm not going to try it. I'm not going to get
I'm too old for this ish. I'm too old for this ish. Yeah. It was okay when I was 25.
Yeah.
Now I'm 36. So I'm 51.
You can still do it. It's just not recommended.
I don't really even drink that much anymore to begin with. But that's beside the point. Adam from Portland is on our phone line, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com. Adam, thank you for waiting. Please go ahead.
I got one for D-Mace, but I'm glad you brought up the chemotaminin thing because I was like, he's got a full drink, and it looks like a double whiskey sour. I'm like, it looks hard, and it was dark, so it wasn't watered down. I'm like, if he drinks this, I'm going to puke for him. Like, it looked hard. It looked incredible. But, no, but those are hockey players. He should have done it. So, D-Mace, this is my problem, all right? So the league has turned into something completely different from when you played, from when I loved it. And I don't think I should apologize for saying I miss big hits, because I do. I miss big hits. Like, I don't want anybody to ever get hurt. Mm-hmm. Like some of these guys, you might as well just take a sledgehammer and hit them in the head the way that some of the hits used to be. But I do miss, like, serious – like, you would never be able to go across the middle against certain teams because they would take your head off. And, like, that's not even a part of the game or a thing anymore. And I was wanting to see if there was some part of the game that you missed. That's like, you know, that doesn't get talked about as much, but like I do miss big, big hits.
Thank you, Adam. I'm with Adam from this standpoint. I don't want anybody to get hurt, and Adam expressed that. I don't want to see no career ending injuries. But do you miss that that part of the game where, you know, receivers and quarterbacks are aware, I can't just be throwing the ball in here because I don't want to put – and Tom Brady has talked about this because he said, listen, it should be up to the offense, the quarterback, to not put his receiver in harm's way than it is for the defensive back to kind of – to have to really pull up. Now, there are some obvious ones, but the flags that are being thrown a lot is just – clean hits, but in today's football, they're deemed, even if they're not hard hits, they're deemed, no, this hit is illegal. You can't do it because of where you hit the guy or where you grazed the guy. You may not have even been aiming for that part of his body, but because he catches the ball and ducked down, or because a quarterback throws it in there at an angle or depth where now he has to jump up for the ball, and you went to angle one way, and because he had to jump, now you hit him in a different area that is deemed illegal. That should be up to the quarterback to see that. That's the part that I miss. Like, you ain't going to just – when guys make a catch in the middle now, it's, oh, look at the fabulous catch he made. It's like, dude, I can run in there not even thinking about getting hit anymore. Like, if you hit me, you're not going to hit me. You're not going to hit me until I catch it and sort of prepare myself for the hit. But I understand why they are doing it. It's to protect the player, and I get it. And I'm all about that. But that part – I do miss, like looking at a game and saying there's no way he's throwing it in there, you know, because I, you know, back in the day it was Pollard. Ain't no way he's throwing it in the middle when Pollard's sitting there at safety. You ain't throwing that ball in the middle because he's gonna hit you legally, but it's gonna hurt. You can't even hit a guy hard anymore without them. The minute those pads go real loud or too loud, and the crowd say, oh, the flag is coming. It's coming. And that's the part that I miss. Like, let a clean hit over the middle be a clean hit without everybody having to look around and say, oh, was that a – and the players are looking, look at what – and the fans are going crazy. No, that's just a hard, good hit. That's not an illegal hit. That part I do miss.
It's been legislated out of a lot of sports in different ways.
And I get it.
And it's for the right reasons. Yeah. But you do lose something with that. Like the battle, the collision at home plate, right, between catcher and base runner, or the takeout at second base, you know, or the battle for the inner part of the plate between a pitcher and batter. You know, am I throwing at you? Or no, you're getting too close to the plate. I'm going to back you off. All of that stuff. Hockey, definitely, with the fighting and the liberties, that's been muted a little bit, not fully. It's the struggle to try to keep it in as much as you can while – not sacrificing safety.
Yes.
And I think of any time there's a play one-on-one between a defensive back and a wide receiver, and if there's even a little bit of contact, the play is blown dead, and the receiver's looking around, doing the flag throwing thing.
Right.
I mean, even in basketball, right? Look, I subscribe to the no blood, no foul. That doesn't work in the NCAA or the NBA, I guess.
Street ball. Yeah.
Street ball, right? Shout out NBA Street. That was a fabulous
video game. Yes.
No blood, no foul. But it's the same thing. There's just a little contact, and someone's sitting on their bum just looking around for the ref and complaining for the ref. You want a little bit of the action. You want that physicality. That's why we like sports in the first place.
Yeah, that physicality has been sort of muted some. The reasons why... I know, and I'm not going to, try to litigate whether those reasons should be good reasons or not. They are trying to preserve the game of football as much as they possibly can. But just that part, I think they went a little bit too far, and I kind of sort of missed that. And though I missed the actual kickoff return rules. I miss them so, like, dude, the play. And now I know they're trying to incorporate it back into it to get more. But they totally ruined that whole experience. They really have, you know. And again, I understand why, the concussions and everything. But they've complete, and they know they've ruined it. They know it. So much so, they're implementing more rules to try to get the ball to be returned. Y'all messed it up. Y'all effed it up, really. That's what y'all did.
Joey from Bellevue, because we started with a question about alcohol, so why don't we finish on a question about alcohol? Joey from Bellevue wants to know, Derek, who would win the 102.5 The Game beer pong tournament?
Ooh. I think because he's sort of, I think, still in that scene a little bit, you know, somewhat. I think Chase may win.
That's who I was thinking.
I think
too.
Chase may win.
I think.
Yeah, because he has to go to a lot of these things, these functions and everything. Yeah. You know, he has to be the great representative as he is for the station. And
you remember this, though, D-Maze, for a brief time.
Yeah.
For a brief time, he retired.
Oh, yeah.
From that lifestyle. Remember?
Yeah, you're right.
But he made a comeback. And I feel like since the comeback has happened, he has got to be considered the favorite.
Yeah. He would. To me, he would be the favorite. I'm trying to think of it. Rex, nah, he got a family. No. Jared just got in. He just got a new kid. No. Adam, no, his kid's still young. Willie, he's been through it.
Yeah, I feel like I'm a veteran that can still hang. You know, as a minor league baseball player, that you do.
But I think you would tap out at some point. You'd just be like, man, nah. David and Big Joe.
Youth is on their side.
Yeah.
Right?
Youth is on David's side. I even think, oh man, Frazier.
Frazier, yeah.
Frazier looks sneaky. He's sneaky. You got to watch Frazier. Yeah. You got to watch Frazier.
Gives you that innocent, wide-eyed,
exactly.
Enthusiastic, but behind the scenes.
I think he can chug a couple beers, yeah.
My first thought was Big Joe, because I can imagine Big Joe showing up to a frat somewhere, even at his age right now.
His game is
dying. He's looking at life at a party in a good way.
Him walking in and go, I got next.
Like Big Joe walk into a frat party and say, give me that beer. He'll show you how to really drink it. He'll just chug it down.
Doing a keg stand.
Yes. He becomes, dang, what movie was that where the older guy came in or the parent came in and just became the life of the party in a good way? God, it's happened in so many movies, but the one particular movie I'm talking about, I can't
remember. Old School?
Well, it happened in Old School, but now he went streaking after that. I don't think Big Joe was going streaking.
I don't know about that one. I had a few conversations with Big Joe. I think that,
you're not ruling it out.
I think Big Joe could be Van Wilder, the guy who's still in college, way past his expiration date at college, and be the life of the party.
Yeah.
So I might go with Big Joe on this one. I think Chase is a popular choice.
Yeah.
I may go Big Joe.
Joe and Chase as a tandem.
Oh,
they would
at the frat scene. Start up interesting conversations. Uh-huh. I think they could draw some attention.
They would be those ringers. Have you the commercial with Willem Dafoe?
They would be the wedding crash.
Willem Dafoe.
That's
and
what
who,
they would
what's
be.
The what's the name? Who's the actress who was on?
They'd be Dumb and Dumber.
No, who is? Why am I thinking about it? Right?
I'd give more so wedding.
Catherine
crash.
O'Hara. It's Catherine O'Hara Willem Dafoe.
Uh-huh.
And it's like they're at a pickleball thing and she's like, play you for those ultras? And they're obviously ringers. And the other people are like, we're pretty good. And Willem Dafoe's like, fascinating. And then they just clean up. I could see Big Joe and Chase being the ringers on a beer pong tournament.
Yeah. Because then you know Ricky would be there as well, so.
Tyler says we're sleeping on Robbie. We're sleeping on Robbie here.
Robbie has it. He has responsibilities. He has too many responsibilities. So
sometimes those guys can sneak up on you. You saw what happened.
How about this one from Adam? Adam texted back in. He says, I feel like Jake, I assume he means Jake Lyman, would be the guy that showed up to the beer pong party with khakis and a polo tucked in and drink ice water and make some not really funny joke about it and awkward it up just because he's that kind of a nice guy.
And that is an important skill, is the actual, like, there's one thing being able to hang and drink and all that stuff, but the beer pong. You got to have experience. It's been a long time since I played beer pong.
Yeah, I would be out.
You put
quickly.
The emphasis on pong there. You went beer pong.
Well, because it's a skill. It's a game.
Yeah.
You got to be, if you're good, that makes you.
Oh.
Like Jake might be the least removed from a beer pong game.
Yeah.
Right.
No.
Unless you've been hanging out
Chase
at the frats.
Chase.
Maybe Chase has been hanging out at the frats. Yeah.
Who knows what Chase is up to this weekend?
But
he wasn't here today.
Our staff.
Oh,
so.
Man.
And now this is with Chase, right? We've seen him bowl. We've seen him shoot basketballs.
Yes.
We've seen him try to do curling.
Yes.
Does he have the beer pong skill?
I think he does.
Okay.
That's the one, I think, skill he has.
Yeah, I think it's one of the skills
Jedi.
He does.
Jedi pong.
Have. It's the pong skill.
We'll do a beer pong tournament with Yellow Gatorade on the show. 615-737-1025. Great questions for Derek, as always. Thank you for your participation. 615-737-1025. I think, gentlemen, that we are in store for the most epic Final Four, maybe ever. And we'll discuss that coming up next. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063. The Game.